Hello and welcome to Station 59. This is a podcast covering anything in the range of strange, and I'm your tour guide to the other side, Chelsea Deanne. And today, I'm so tired. I'm just so tired. My summer vacation, which really wasn't much of a vacation because I just worked at a different job all summer, but nevertheless, my summer vacation, my break from school, has come to an end. Officially back at elementary, back to work. And the first days of school are just always so chaotic, and I'm just tired. Also, it's 9:45 at night, so that's great. But I figured why not pep myself up a little bit by talking about a different vacation that I went on. Huh? You like my segue there? I am taking us back on Haunted Holiday. Okay, you guys, I'm bringing it back, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, because it's literally been months since I brought this stupid thing up. I went with three of my friends on a road trip halfway across the country to visit four different haunted locations back in April sounds right. But I set out on a personal mission that I was going to tell you the history and the hauntings of each location that I went to and our personal experiences at each place. And then guess what I did? Okay, guess. I covered one of the locations. I covered West Virginia Penitentiary. And then I abandoned this little series potential because I just couldn't keep myself interested in it. But today I am back and I am ready to tell you all the location that was visually, aesthetically, my favorite. Like, truly, visually, this was the epitome of haunted, abandoned places. It looked haunted. It looked like it just had been standing there on its own forever and no one touched it, and it just was left the way that they left it. I don't know. That didn't make any sense, but you get it. I am talking about the Eastern State Penitentiary. And like I said, from a purely visual standpoint, this place is stunning. It's incredibly unique. It's partially reclaimed by nature, and it's just exactly what comes to mind when you think of the words haunted and penitentiary. But is it truly haunted? Does it live up to the hype? Well, before we can get into that, we have to get into the history. And before we can get into the history, we have to get into some sources. Today, I used easternstate.org, Wikipedia, Mental Floss, All That's Interesting, NPR, Amy's Crypt, Ghost City Tours, and thoughtcatalog.com. So, should we do it? Should we go? Should we talk about it? So let's do this. In the late 1700s, the prison system of Philadelphia was a majorly hot mess. Same here, but like no one else's life is being affected, so it's fine. Here, however, people were essentially being held in giant pens and left to their own devices, and I'm not talking just about men, but men, women, and children. So obviously this led to... Ow. I stubbed my toe. Obviously, this led to a lot of abuse being committed by both fellow inmates and guards alike. So in 1787, the Philadelphia Society for Alleviating the Miseries of Public Prisons, the PSAMP, if you will, met at, of all places, Benjamin Franklin's house. And they were like, we gotta do something because this is just not working. So this guy named Benjamin Rush, who is a well-respected doctor in the city, was like, hey, I have an idea. He wanted to build a place where criminals had a genuine chance to reflect on their actions and, theoretically, realize the error of their ways and repent. He said, quote, "Let the name of this house convey an idea of its benevolent and salutary design, but let it by no means be called a prison or by any other name that is associated with what is infamous in the opinion of mankind." End quote. And thus, the name Penitentiary was born, which is kind of neat, huh? So, at first, they reformed the Walnut Street Jail by building a penitentiary house with 16 cells. The name of the game when it came to the penitentiary thing was solitary confinement. They thought that if the prisoners... Well, I guess prisoner isn't technically the correct term because they were trying to distance themselves from the term prison, but, like, they were still effectively being held against their will, so... Prisoners. But that was the whole thing. They thought that if the prisoners were in total solitary confinement, they would have no choice but to reflect on what they'd done, and surely they'd reach the conclusion that, oh my god, I'm not on the right path in life. I have to do something different. And then they'd be reformed, and they'd be able to return to society and turn their lives around and be just a great fucking citizen. Okay? Right? Sure. This became known as the Pennsylvania system. and was very, very different than the currently implemented system, which was known as the Auburn system. This was where prisoners were forced to perform physical labor together, in silence, and could be subjected at any time to physical punishment. So by comparison, solid plan, right? Or solid goal, at least. So anyway, they do this to Walnut Street Jail, right? One problem. Philadelphia's population just keeps growing. Philly was popping off. It was growing. It was exponential. It was crazy, right? Sure. Great. So more people, statistically speaking, more people brings more crime. So this little jail with only 16 solitary cells, not going to cut it, okay? So 30 years after the meeting of the PSAMP, ground was broken in a cherry orchard outside the city. This broken ground would eventually become the Eastern State Penitentiary. The penitentiary was designed by John Haviland, who also designed the Missouri State Penitentiary. Yep. So if his name sounds familiar, it should, unless you're not listening to me. And that's, honestly, I get it. But like, you're listening to me, so why are you not listening to me? Turn your listening ears on, please. One of my friends from middle school showed up at my school today, the school that I work at, and was doing some work for what he does now. And he was like, "Chelsea?" I was like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" And then he texted me later and he was like, "It was really, really weird to hear you use your teacher voice." Okay, John Haviland designed Missouri State Penitentiary, designed Eastern State Penitentiary. So Haviland's design for this place was like really cool and totally revolutionary. It's designed like a pinwheel with cell blocks branching off from one central point. It looks like a windmill. Like I have a sweatshirt that has the layout of the penitentiary on the back of the sweatshirt, and people are always like, "Wow, that's a cool windmill." And I'm like, "It's a prison. Thank you so much." So the idea there is that one single guard could monitor the entire place from the central rotunda. Like, just sitting in the middle, he could, like, turn around and see all of the cell blocks. The original plan was for 7 single-level cell blocks with the capacity of 250 prisoners total. The outside of the prison, much like Missouri State, was meant to be imposing. John Haviland said that the building should strike fear into the hearts of those who thought of committing a crime. The inside of the prison took many cues from churches, which is a theme that we will see throughout in a lot of different aspects of the penitentiary. It was all about repenting, after all, so gotta get some Jesus up in there. And kind of proof that they actually were really trying to reform these inmates rather than, like, what we do now, which is just put them behind bars for as long as possible. The most common sentence carried out in the early years of Eastern State was only 2 years long. And the maximum was, like, 8 years. Like, you didn't see anybody serving more than 8 years, which is a long fucking time to be in solitary confinement. But, like, they weren't trying to keep them forever, you know? They were, like, genuinely trying to be, like, you can do better, you can be better, you know, kind of. So, yeah, there's that. The cells themselves were really, really unique. They originally, each cell had an attached outdoor yard. Like, each individual cell had its own cell yard. Because they took their solitary confinement very seriously, so even their outside time was solitary. And they even staggered the times so that no two inmates would be outside next to each other at a given time. And then, hold on, I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. But yeah, the warden was legally required to visit every single inmate every single day, and the overseers were required to see each inmate 3 times a day. So they weren't completely by themselves, never seeing another human for 2 straight years, because that would drive anybody insane. It was like they just only saw the guards and shit like that. And so not that that would be great for your mental health, but it's better than seeing nobody, I guess. Also, the doors into the cells were, this is another religious thing, okay? So the doors into the cells were really, really low, which would force the prisoners, inmates, I guess, to bow each time they entered or left their cell, which is supposed to show penance. Again, the religious theme. Keeping to that still, each cell also had a single skylight, which was to represent the eye of God, implying that God was always watching them. On the plus side, kind of, each cell had a faucet with running water and a flush toilet. They also had curved pipes that went along the wall where they would run hot water through it during the cold months to keep the cells warm. So they had central heating. And these were accommodations that at the time, not even the White House had. They didn't have flush toilets at the White House. They did not have central heating, any of that. So that was like kind of cool. However, the toilets were remotely flushed by a guard, and like not when you did your business. You didn't flush when you had your business done. They would flush it twice a week because they didn't want the inmates to be able to communicate, like to come up with a code using toilet flushes and be able to communicate that way, which I don't even know how you would do that, but I'm not very clever. So maybe that's the problem. But yeah, kind of gross, but not as gross as chamber pots, I guess. So, I don't know. Okay, so the prison officially opened on October 25th, 1829, before it was totally done being built. But even so, at the time, it was the largest building in the United States. Like I said, it was supposed to be 7 cell blocks, all single story with little exercise yards and junk. But by the time they finished cell block 3, the penitentiary was already over capacity, so all the rest of the cell blocks had to be built 2 stories. And as you might imagine, 2-story buildings make the whole individual exercise yard thing hard to accomplish, because you can't exactly have an outside space. They were concrete, okay? They were concrete walls. And you can't have an outside time with a concrete wall if there's another thing on top of it. So that went away. Is what I'm trying to get at. So inmates started being allowed to exercise together, but they had to wear masks over their heads with eye holes cut out, and they had to remain in total silence, which is like so creepy. I hate that. By the late 1800s, the people at Eastern State realized that they needed a hospital because the cramped cell blocks made it really easy for diseases like tuberculosis to spread. So they did. They built a complete state-of-the-art hospital in cell block 3. It had an operating room, which Al Capone actually got his tonsils taken out in that operating room. So, wow. Great. I thought I'd talk about Al Capone more in this episode, but then I just didn't want to because he doesn't really tie in that much, except that he has a really fancy cell and, like, got to live relatively luxuriously while incarcerated. And so that was weird. But, yeah, okay, so they had an operating room. They had laboratories, a pharmacy, an x-ray lab, a hydrotherapy room, a psychiatric department, and a solarium. Which if you don't know what a solarium is, it is an open-air sunroom, basically, because they believed that fresh air and sunlight could treat tuberculosis. By 1913, the penitentiary had abandoned its initial system of total solitary confinement because the place was just, like, too damn crowded. By the 1920s, 2 to 3 men were living in each cell. I'm just kind of rushing through the history at this point. I'm so sorry. There was an escape in 1945, thanks to 2 men in cell 68. I'm gonna butcher this name. I don't know. I'm gonna say Clarence Kleinedienst. I don't know. Kleinedienst? Clarence and his cellmate William Russell spent a full year designing and digging a tunnel out of their cell. They dug down 15 feet, 97 feet over under the courtyard, then 15 feet back up to Fairmont Avenue and 22nd Street. They supported the tunnel with wooden braces and even hooked it up with electric lights. Like, they had this pimped out. That's probably an offensive term. I shouldn't say that. It was lit. This is stupid. This whole thing's stupid. I'm quitting. On the morning of April 3rd, 1945, the 2 designers and 10 other men escaped through the tunnel, and all of the men who escaped were recaptured and returned to prison. In April of 1959, cell block 15 opened. Hold on. Sorry, my cat was smacking a water bottle cap around in the living room. And we have hardwood floors. They're not real hardwood floors, but it's very loud is what I was trying to say. And now he's sitting on my lap. And we're going to tell a podcast story together. A podcast story. That's what they're called. Yes. So what was I talking about? Cell block 15. Cell Block 15 would come to be known as Death Row, because this is where the men sentenced to death were placed. However, nobody was ever actually put to death here in Eastern State. Extending from the end of Cell Block 2, Death Row had 17 cells on each of its two floors and served as the maximum security block. Underground are four small isolation cells. They have low ceilings and no plumbing, and these were used after solitary confinement stopped being the norm and started being used as a punishment. So this became known, classically, as the hole, but was also referred to as the Klondike. Isolation wasn't the only form of punishment used at Eastern State. Okay, now you're gonna cause trouble in here. Okay, great. What a time to take a break when I'm about to get into just the worst shit. So, yeah, isolation, not the only form of punishment, okay? And real quick, I just want to refer us back to the beginning of the episode where this whole place, this whole penitentiary, was dreamt up by the Philadelphia Society for Alleviating the Miseries of Public Prisons. Remember that? Okay, great. Let's get into some punishments. There was the Mad Chair, where inmates were bound to a chair so tightly that it would cut off circulation and in some cases cause the need for amputations later. There was also the Water Bath, where the guards would dunk inmates in a tub of water, then they would be hung out on a wall in the middle of winter until ice would form on the inmate's skin. Then there's the Iron Gag. In the Iron Gag, an inmate's hands were tied behind their back and strapped to an iron collar that went into their mouth, so that any time that they moved, it would cause their tongue to tear and bleed. Yeah, just awful shit, awful. The penitentiary did see a few riots over the way that they were being treated, which caused the state of Pennsylvania to begin considering shutting the place down. Eventually, in 1971, the penitentiary was officially shut down, and its inmates and employees were moved to other surrounding prisons. The city of Philadelphia purchased the property and had plans to redevelop it, so there was talk of turning it into a mall or a luxury apartment complex. Wouldn't that be nice? The cat is now doing parkour off of my bedroom door, and if you can hear it, I'm so sorry. In 1988, the Eastern State Penitentiary Task Force petitioned Mayor Wilson Good to stop the redevelopment, and they were successful! Woo! So then in 1994, Eastern State officially opened to the public for history tours. They had to do a lot of cleanup before they could open, though, because in the time after closing down, the penitentiary had stood completely empty. Well, almost. Basically, a whole forest had grown inside, like it crumbled walls and stuff, and then a whole colony of stray cats moved in and took over, which I wish was still a thing, because I would have just stayed there forever. Today, the penitentiary operates as a museum and historic site. It's open year-round for both guided and self-guided tours, which is what we did when we visited. We did the self-guided. It's like an audio tour where you get like a little headset and a little Walkman thing, and you listen to an audio tour, which is narrated by Steve Buscemi, which is a really interesting choice. I think he's from Philly, which is why they did it, but I was like, huh, interesting. Over 220,000 people visit every year, so this place is still full of life. But is it full of afterlife? Let's discuss. Okay, so there are lots of reports that have allegedly been coming in since the 40s, 1940s specifically, because it was open during the 18s as well. Some of the reports include hearing someone crying out as if they're in extreme pain, like they're being tortured. Orbs and streaks of light will appear and then suddenly disappear again. There are disembodied footsteps and voices heard down the halls, or hearing the sound of your name being called, but nobody's there. People have heard the sounds of cell doors slamming shut, door handles jiggling, and loud, sadistic laughter. Which I read the notes, wrote the little guideline for myself. And now saying it out loud, every time I've come across the sadistic laughter part, I get a little chill at the top of my spine, and all the lights are off in my house. So this was a really good choice for me. I'm totally not thoroughly creeping myself out talking about this. It's fine. In cell block 12 in particular, it's known for the sound of cackling coming from nowhere, as well as whispers and the, oh my fucking God, I have heard a lot of paranormal stories. I have consumed a lot of paranormal media. I have heard about a lot of things coming out of disembodied voices, okay? The idea of something cackling and you know nothing's there, I would simply shit my pants on site. Just, I'd be done. I'd be done. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. Great. Glad we got that established. People will also say that they feel someone tapping them on the shoulder, but when they turn around, nobody's there. That does still scare me less than the cackling thing, just in case you were wondering. And of course, what would a story on this podcast be without shadow figures? Cell block 6 is apparently full of them. As well as the guard towers, which are known for shadowy figures of guards appearing and disappearing, which is crazy to read when I was doing my research for this, because get this. So I went here, right? Said that up top, okay? So we were out in the yard going out to cell block 15, and my friend Janelle, you remember her? She's great. We love her. Janelle saw like a shadowy figure in a watchtower, which is so wild, right? Okay, so there's also an apparition of a woman on the second floor. I didn't mark down of which cell block. Whoops. But the second floor somewhere that is seen so often that apparently the employees refer to her as the soap lady. Again, no context given. I don't know why she's the soap lady. A Travel Channel show called Most Haunted got recording of objects moving on their own. And probably the most famous story of the paranormal at the prison comes from a locksmith named Gary Johnson. He was working as a locksmith. I already said locksmith, but he was working as a locksmith, in case you forgot, during the restoration of the penitentiary. And while in cell block 4, he found that one of the locks was being really stubborn and he just had a hell of a time trying to open it. So he says he had this feeling, he's standing there struggling, right? Same. He had this feeling like something was watching him really intensely. So he looked around and up and down the cell block and there's no one there. So he gets back to work. And just a few seconds later, he gets the feeling again. Like somebody is watching him. They're staring him down. Somebody is, you know that feeling of just like the eyes boring into the back of your head. That's what he feels. So he says he turns around again, looks up and down the cell block and sees nothing. But as he starts to turn, a black shadow suddenly leapt across the cell block in front of him. He also claims that he was frozen by a rush of cold air, and in the rush, he could see the faces of tortured souls appear on the walls of the cell he'd been trying to open. Gary's got a little flair for the dramatic, and I appreciate it. But now, I have to tell you a little confession. I have a little confession for you that I feel really guilty about. So, in looking more closely while doing my research for this episode, aka I read the entire Eastern State Penitentiary website, like front to back, instead of just skimming like I did when I went to go visit, and I discovered that Eastern State Penitentiary actually discourages looking at the pen as haunted. They want you to focus on the history of the place and respect the lives that were spent and the humans that suffered inside, and I have huge, huge respect for that. I love that. However, because of this, they do not allow any sort of paranormal investigation equipment to be used inside the penitentiary, and I did not know this when I visited. So I used my spirit box. One time. Just once. But now I feel really bad about it. But I did catch something really fucking interesting, so I'm sorry. But it got cool. But Janelle and I were checking out Death Row, and I had my spirit box going, and we had headphones in so that we could, like, really hear it. And I said something along the lines of, like, you know, is anybody in here with us? And the spirit box goes, Elmo. And I kind of laughed about it, you know, like, haha, Elmo, that's so random, what? No. We go to leave, and I shit you not, on the other side of the wall from where we'd been, we see this poster talking about Elmo Smith. He was an inmate who had been housed in a death row cell during his time at Eastern State, and he was not a cool dude. Not great. Not a good time. So I'm really glad that we didn't stay and talk to him. But that happened. That truly happened. And that is the story of the Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Woo! I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, please think about sharing it to a friend who would also enjoy, maybe, or leaving me, like, a rating or review wherever you're listening. Just think about it. You don't have to do it, but I would like it. As always, I will have pictures to go along with today's story up on my social media, which is Station 59 Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks so much for joining me on the Haunt Mess Express today. See what I did there? I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope you stay creepy. And I love y'all. Bye.